Meet Reed Lance Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically, on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try to fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man, with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
Happy Saturday or happy Sunday, wherever you may be in the USA or around the world. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. Wow, let me tell you, the news this week from around the world and here in the USA, it hasn't been a fire hose. It's been more like a major water conduit sucking water and information out of the Colorado River to LA. I mean, fire hose would not describe it. I had planned over the last few days to be working on books 6 and 7 of the Threads West and American Saga series. That kind of got thrown by the wayside because it took 3 times the prep for this show, and there's a lot of prep for every show, just to try and decipher and to sort and to choose what news I was going to bring you that you hadn't already heard, and the news behind the news, which is what this show is known for, and the news prior to all the rest of the media having it, which is what this show is known for. And I think I got her done. But, wow, brain damage. And, you know, the flow, the tsunami, the avalanche of information is continuing literally up to a half an hour ago before I started the show. First, I'm going to tell you a little bit about the show today. You know, let's do first things first. We're going to start a 3-part historical series. Each one's going to be relatively brief. But it's about tyranny, the history of tyranny on the planet Earth. Today, we're going to go over kind of the modern tyrants. I'm going to give you their names and where they were and what they did in no particular order, because they're all kind of, you know, 19th and 20th century despots. Next week, we're going to go over some of the ancient tyrannical rulers, and we're going to go over what tyranny is, because we will find on our little journey through tyranny together over the next 3 weeks, that there are common elements to tyrants, and there is common elements to tyranny from the beginning of time to right now with what we are witnessing in the United States, in Israel, in France, in Italy, in Canada, particularly Canada. That is forefront in the world right now, but it is simply an indication of what is happening everywhere. And you know, if you're going to defeat something, folks, you have to understand it. And tyranny is a word that is thrown around and bandied about right now, but you need to understand what tyranny is and what a tyrant is. And they're right in front of your face right now on the news. Well, I'm not sure they're on the mainstream media news because, you know, they're too busy talking about Trump. Anyway, that's where we're going to go. We're going to go down the rabbit hole of tyranny. And I got a number of emails from folks saying, you never really finished. You kind of left us hanging a little bit on the Robber Baron series. Well, don't worry. There's one more segment coming on that. I've been putting it together. And we're going to be taking some Robber Barons of old and comparing them to the robber barons of today. I've done a little bit of that in those two segments. If you didn't listen to them last 3 or 4 weeks on therightsideradio.com, go to the archives. But tyranny is forefront now. And tyranny is going to be forefront for the rest of this year, as I will explain to you. And then we're going to talk about, yes, I know, big sigh, big groan, COVID. I'm going to bring you the numbers I've been able to put together. They're very well hidden. Gee, big surprise. I mean, you know, I'm sure the hospitals want you to know exactly how much they're being paid to treat you misproperly, treat you inappropriately, and kill you. No, I'm not being melodramatic. That is what's going on. This is genocide. It is premeditated murder, aided and abetted, in fact, cheered on by the cabal of China, the globalists, and the democratic Marxists here in the United States, and by the way, Canada. And it is reprehensible, doesn't encompass it. Absolutely diabolical, barely dents it. But the more and more information that comes out, the more and more studies that are being completed by people who don't have skin in the game, you know, who haven't been bought by Big Pharma or are beholden to China, or are under the thumbs or coercion or monetary influence of the globalists, the more it is absolutely, flatly, incontrovertible, irrefutable, and in your face. And it's not an accident. There are no coincidences. And then we're going to go into our rat-a-tat-tat. And boy, do I have a pile of that for you today, as I always do. Maybe even today we'll get through it. And finally, if we have time, I'm going to tell you a little bit about what Judicial Watch is doing on election fraud, because that's an upcoming big segment on this show. And whether or not there's election fraud in the upcoming 2022 elections, and folks, if we don't take at least one of the chambers of Congress, and hopefully two, we're in a world of hurt. I am not one who has a personality to say we are defeated. I am not one to say hope is gone. But let me tell you, our fight, our battle, will be a far longer, far steeper uphill climb if we don't take one or both houses of Congress. And if we're going to do that, then every one of you who is listening to me right now, and everyone that you can talk to, needs to be involved in these elections. You need to be down watching for fraud. Remember that the Democratic Marxists will do anything. They know their hold on power is tenuous. They know they are the tyranny of the minority. They know that there's a tsunami of discontent and anti-democratic Marxist ballot lever pulling coming at them. And they will do anything, and I mean anything. It doesn't matter how many people get hurt, how many people are financially ruined, how many people die, to hold on to that power. And one of the things they'll do is to repeat, or try to, the election fraud of 2020. And for all those who call that the big lie, let me tell you, the big lie is that there wasn't election fraud in 2020. There's been studies in Arizona, the whole nine yards, in Pennsylvania, in Wisconsin, in Georgia. And in a future show, I'm going to pull all those together for you because they're disjointed, intentionally disjointed through censorship, right? That is the historical story of the last 2 weeks. This is all tied in. Censorship is part of tyranny. Tyranny is part of election fraud. And all of it is underpinned by freedom, whether we can retain it or whether we lose it. And it's up to us. The ball's in our court. We hold the flag. Our hands grasp the saber. We are the buglers and the drum beaters. There's no one else. It's just us. And we better make it happen. So let's get started. You know, over the last 100-150 years, we have had ample display of dictators and tyrants and tyranny. You know many of them. And by the way, you know, it's kind of funny. Virtually all, there's only one actually, virtually all are on the left. They were all socialists or communists. They were all fascists. And you know, I laugh every time the Democratic Marxists use the term fascist for folks who are conservative, or folks even who are moderate, or folks even who, you know, don't agree with anything. That's the left's mantra right now. Because fascism is a product of the left. So let's go down this list real quick to kind of set up the upcoming segments, to start broadening our understanding of what tyranny is, because tyranny is what we face. Fidel Castro, he was the founder of communist Cuba along with his bloodthirsty henchman Che Guevara, and he took power in 1959, kept it through 2008. The power was grabbed in a revolution. When he died, as all good despots do, he transferred, as many despots do, all his power to his family. You know, a little nepotism in your despotism is always a good thing, right? It's kind of like sugar on your Cheerios. So the new dictator of Cuba is his brother Raul. And you know, Castro involved Cuba in multiple wars and revolutions throughout Latin America and Africa. Lord only knows how many deaths can be attributable to his tampering and his incessant push to expand communism, with, of course, him taking a little money and a little power along the way, which seems to be one of those common elements of despotism. Nicol Ceaușescu, the communist dictator of Romania, 1965 to 1989. And, you know, some of these names you're not going to recognize, but it's going to give you an idea of how many tyrants there have been just in the last 100 to 150 years. Wait till we go back in time next week. He was the communist, big surprise, dictator of Romania, 1965 to 1989. He loved Stalin, and he ruled on Stalin's model through the, quote, cult of personality. He was considered one of the more ruthless communist rulers in Eastern Europe. And you know, justice prevailed. He was overthrown and executed in a national uprising in 1989. How about Jean-Claude Baby Doc Duvalier? He was the dictator of Haiti, 1971 through 1986. Many of the incredible social, medical, financial problems of Haiti, putting aside the storms the poor island has endured, goes back to this guy's despotic and violent rule. The younger Duvalier, Baby Doc, he assumed leadership in Haiti after the death of his father, who was Papa Doc. You know, you have Papa Doc and Baby Doc. Oh, how cute. He fled Haiti when there was a popular uprising in 1986. Are you beginning to see some threads here? Francisco Franco, the dictator of Spain, 1939 to 1975. Very long, very bloody, very vicious civil war is what he used to catapult himself into power. And of course, he met, kind of an unfortunate end. There's some question as to whether he died peacefully or, should we say, was assisted in his quote-unquote peaceful death. And then there's there's Muammar Gaddafi, 1969 to 2011. You know, this guy was eccentric, to put it mildly. You've seen pictures of him, I'm sure. He was probably crazy, and he was increasingly desperate, particularly as Hillary and Barry Obama began to close in on him after, of course, he had given up his nuclear ambitions, which one of the things that he gave up his nuclear ambitions, folks, and then Hillary and Barry killed him. And that's one of the reasons that the United States has found it very difficult to convince anybody. You know, North Korea, we're going to talk about him in a moment, or Iran, to give up their nuclear weapons. Because it seems that if you, play ball with the United States and you give up your arms, your reward is you get killed and there's nothing you can do about it. I mean, think about it. Think about the mistakes or the intentional wrong steps in foreign policy which has led us to today and which has really bolstered, has really kind of taught the dictators of today how to maintain power and fend off, supposedly the world's greatest superpower. You have Adolf Hitler. By the way, Gaddafi, he was killed in 2011. Adolf Hitler, we're familiar with him, unfortunately. 1933 to 1945. Took his own life along with that of his mistress in his bunker in Berlin as the Russians, primarily, and the Americans, secondarily, were closing in on the city. He took office. He did not have a majority. He had a plurality, about 30 or 35% of the vote. But in a parliamentary setting, we're going to talk about that when we come to Canada, you can basically become the head high mucky muck of a country with a minority because you cobble together various constituencies in the parliament to give yourself a voting majority, which makes you the prime minister. Gee, just like Trudy up there in Canada right now. Now, what you find is that all these dictators lied like rugs to get into the positions of power they finally attained. They lied like rugs whether they led a revolution, whether they instigated a civil war, or whether they were quote-unquote elected, like Hitler and our friend Trudy up there in Canada. Or, if one really wants to have a jaundiced view, like President Gaddafi and Obama in his third term right now here in the United States. And I can go on down the list on the current map of the planet. Anyway, after he was elected, He quickly, using emergency powers, where have we heard that before? Well, you're going to hear a lot about it. Using emergency powers, he quickly threw out the constitution of Germany and began to rule with hobnailed boots by the use of force. And in the end, he is responsible for roughly 12 million deaths in the Holocaust and the concentration camps, and World War II, which killed another 70 million people on the face of the planet. How about Saddam Hussein? He was the dictator of Iraq, 1979 to 2003. He thought nothing of mass genocide against minority Kurds or Shiite Muslims in Iraq. And of course, the enmity between he and Iran, you know, he was Sunni, Iran was Shiite, is legendary. And the use of biological, chemical, it didn't matter. I mean, as long as you killed more of them than they killed of you, everybody was a happy clam over there in that tempest that was the Middle East during his reign. And of course, he was brought down by the Gulf War. And then Mao Zedong, I've given you lots of information on him. Basically, he was the founder, he was the ruler of communist China, took power by force. He exiled by force what was left of the nationalist Chinese army under Chiang Kai-shek to Taiwan. And here we are again, China and Taiwan. Except now Taiwan is the largest manufacturer of chips in the world, and there's a chip shortage. And he who controls chips controls technology. You know, all these things, it's amazing when you look at history, you look back 50 years or 100 years and you see people making mistakes, and you and I are contending with them today. History will repeat it if you allow it. How many times have I said that? Anyway, it was a very long civil war, which he won in 1949, and he founded the People's Republic of China, what we know as Red China. When Mao was in power, he had a number of purges, bloody repressions, and he had, of course, the Cultural Revolution. I went into it in great detail back in that historical segment, I think it was 3, 4, 5 months ago. And somewhere, nobody knows, nobody will ever know probably, somewhere around 65 million Chinese who didn't think right or who had religion of almost any type, particularly the Muslim religion, or who didn't adhere to what Mao considered to be the proper cultural and social norms, were in one way, shape, or form exterminated by Mao. This is another common theme through tyranny. If you don't conform, if you don't toe the party line, no pun intended, then you go away. I mean, the left thinks nothing of just vaporizing their enemies. This is not the kumbaya, you know, you disagree with us, but and we really can't tolerate that, but we'll kind of take care of you and put you off here in a corner. No. There is no corner. There's just a grave or a mass grave. Oh, then we have Benito Mussolini. By the way, another common thread with all these left-wing tyrants is that they create great unrest. They stir the pot around the globe. They cause wars, they cause famines, they cause all sorts of human misery. Think about Mao, let me just drop back to him again. The Korean War, hostilities with Taiwan, the invasion and occupation of Tibet, border wars which are ongoing with India, border clashes with the Soviet Union, that's why the peace between them is rather uneasy. And, you know, huge support, both overt and indirect, in the Indochina War. And then after that, what we know is the Vietnam War. The Indochina War was mostly French. How about Benito Mussolini, Hitler's buddy? 1922 to 1943, that was his reign of powerful terror. He took power using overt force and the threat of force. Fear. He used fear, folks. Is this ringing a bell? What have we been subjected to for the past 2 years? The psychosis of COVID, fear, that's what it is. And he was forced from power after World War II, or actually at the end of World War II. And he was captured, such poetic justice, partisan guerrillas, yes. And he was executed along with his mistress. Let's cry bitter tears. By the way, as a little historical sidelight, their dead bodies were then hung upside down for several weeks in front of a gas station. It does bring to mind certain images, doesn't it? We'll get there another time. How about Augusto Pinochet, the dictator of Chile, 1973 to 1990. Another very bloody military coup, 73. And the elected president was overthrown and, killed. You know, I mean, he wasn't pardoned, he wasn't exiled. Nope. Typical left deal, he was just toast. In the end, Pinochet gave up his power. But that was only because he was in poor health. And the unsavory alternative was becoming apparent to him. That he might not even, you know, live out his somewhat tenuous remaining existence because of his illness. Joseph Stalin. Boy, we've talked about him in previous historical segments too. 1924 to 1953. He is the guy who really set up the first communist cult of personality. Which, by the way, was used very successfully by Barack Obama in 08 and 12. And was used in a reverse sense very successfully, although they had to cheat to finally get it across the finish line, by the Democratic Marxists in the 2020 election against Trump. You know, you can have a cult of personality where you are just the greatest thing since sliced bread since you're lying your butt off to get votes or get soldiers or get support or whatever you happen to need. Or you can lie through your you can lie through your teeth every time you move your lips to talk about how bad the other guy is. You can use cult of personality as a two-edged sword. And we've seen it, haven't we? We've seen it since 2008, right through 2020 election, right here in the United States. Well, Stalin is the guy who kind of, should we say, dreamed that whole little stairway to power up. And by the way, his genocidal policies against his political opponents is somewhere around another 20 or so, nobody knows, million people vanished or put to death. How about Kim Il-sung, the founder of Communist North Korea, 1948 to 1994. He set everything up on the Stalinist model. He was the grand poobah. Everybody was to love him. He could only do good stuff for his poor North Korean people, you know. And like many of the despots, this is another current theme, there was no election when he was killed. There was not even, you know, like a meeting of a commission to choose somebody new. No, power just kind of automatically passed on to his son. And that's Kim Jong-il, the current or the father of the current cherub who runs North Korea. By the way, before he left power, before he died, the elder Jong started the bloody Korean War. So here we go with that same thread of tyranny. And then we have Kim Jong-il. He was a dictator of North Korea from 1994 to 2011. Got his power from his father. And he set up his son to inherit the country when he tipped over. It's under Kim Jong-il that North Korea developed nuclear weapons. Gee, thanks, Bill Clinton. And engaged in dangerous is understated. Nuclear diplomacy with the United States and neighboring nations. And occasional military skirmishes with South Korea. He died December 17, 2011. And gee, here comes the third generation of tyrants. Kim Jong-un. You know, this guy, and we're all familiar with him. We've seen pictures of him, etc. And he also kind of operated on the cult of personality. In fact, as he stepped into power, he insisted that he be called the great successor. And he was only in his 20s, by the way. He was educated in a German boarding school. Gee, maybe you ought not send your kids to school in Germany. And he had too many bloody purges to even mention. You know, like every other left-wing fascist, dissent cannot be tolerated. We're going to get into this right after this historical story because I'm going to tell you the rest of the story. The rest of the story. So the last one I think we'll talk about as far as modern tyrants go until we get into our next segment is Josip Broz Tito. He was the founder and the leader of the communist, do we have a current theme here? Yugoslavian Communist Party, 1945 to 1980. To his credit, he got Yugoslavia out of Soviet domination. To his extreme discredit, he, of course, stepped into the power vacuum as the independent communist leader. And Tito, in some ways, kept Yugoslavia's really bitter and bickering and divided ethnic groups under control. But after he died, he had never solved anything. He simply suppressed it. And things began to unravel, which finally resulted in the Yugoslav Civil War, which destroyed the nation, right? And that is where we have everything that happened in Bosnia. It's amazing how the one toe over the line in history creates huge holes that you fall into later. One of the common themes, and we're going to discuss this in detail next week, that run through all these dictatorships, and you'll see in the historical part of this, or the ancient historical part of this next week, that it was true even then thousands of years ago, and that is speech. The expression of any opinion, the expression of any fact, to voice anything, no matter how well founded in truth, how well backed up by evidence, is absolutely a no-no. That cannot be allowed. You can see what happens here in the United States when somebody tries to speak the truth, whether it's about COVID treatments, or about the military, or about the efficacy or negative efficacy of the jabs, or voting quote-unquote rights versus election fraud perpetration. This is a common thread. And now I'm going to tell you the rest of the story. The rest of the story is that the willingness to brutally, viciously, violently, without regard, without care, in fact, perhaps with enjoyment, crack down on your political opposition, crack down on your dissidents, crack down on anyone, particularly leaders of the dissidents, who in any way, shape, or form might undermine your complete grip on power, your total mastery of control over the people you lied and said you loved to get yourself into office, is not tolerated. If you are now a parent or a grandparent of a school kid and you stand up at a school board meeting, you are a domestic terrorist. I've brought you the stories. And it's true. If you are Donald Trump, you are a stochastic terrorist. S-T-O-C-H-A-S-T-I-C. You know, the left is inventing new terms to try and get all this point across. And this all ties into the J6 deal. His rhetoric prior to what happened there on J6, the left is now terming stochastic terrorism, which basically means, and I quote from the dictionary, quote, the public demonization of a person or group resulting in the incitement of a violent act, which is statistically probable, but whose specifics cannot be predicted, unquote. Wow. Who, folks, really, given that definition, are the stochastic terrorists of today? Is it conservatives? Or moderates? Or independents? Is it the truckers up there in the streets of Ottawa? Or tooling toward Jerusalem as I speak to you? Or rallying in Italy, Australia, and New Zealand? Or is it the left who is trying to apply the term, the age-old trick of accuse the other side of what you are blatantly doing? Stochastic terrorism, which is obviously a tool of the modern left, is now being used as a bludgeon by the modern left. And why is that? Because they are the tyrants of today. Trudeau up there in Canada, Macron in France, the Prime Minister of Israel, who took power in a coup, by the way, against Netanyahu that really resembled what happened here in the United States against Trump. And if you think back, wasn't it Obama who, years before, actually used taxpayer money illegally to try and undermine Netanyahu then? And wasn't Obama in that January 6th, January 6th Oval Office meeting with Comey and Biden, the cadaver, and Susan Rice, who really runs the White House right now, and the CIA director, Brennan, when they came up with the plot, which they instigated so cleverly with the help of a treasonous mainstream media? I wonder if there's any connection between what happened to Netanyahu, much to the peril of Israel and the Israeli people, and what happened to Trump. There seems to be a common thread in the two. Barry Obama didn't like either one of them, and both were dissidents. Both were, we'll use the words of the left, stochastic terrorists, at least the way the left looks at it. You know, tyranny, folks, is a despotic form of government that's exercised in reality by a single person, who is the tyrant, through force and violence and coercion and subterfuge instead of respect for the laws. We're going to talk about this in great detail next week, the definition of tyranny. And boy, is this all going to come clear to you. By the way, the idea behind stochastic terrorism, which the left is now trying to employ against Donald Trump and anybody supporting Trump and any conservative in this J6 and a host of other nefarious activities of theirs, is it's a leader or organization, and I'm quoting this description, if you will, a leader or organization that uses rhetoric in the mass media against a group of people. This rhetoric, while hostile or hateful, doesn't explicitly tell someone to carry out an act of violence against that group, but a person feeling threatened is motivated to do so as a result. And number three, the individual act of political violence can't be predicted as such, but that violence will happen is much more probable thanks to the rhetoric. Oh, what a convenient definition for the J6 folks up there, the J6 committee, and the two rhinos, Cheney and Kissinger, that sit on it. Do you kind of see how this theme, how this thread of tyranny weaves through history, and how it's in your face today, and how it's being used to maintain a grip on power and to eliminate in any way, shape, or form they can anybody who might stand up to them, anybody who might differ from them, and certainly anybody who holds a different worldview than they do. And we're seeing the same thing in Canada, because this is really the rest of the story. I don't know if you've heard, you might have by the time you hear this show, but I'm going to give you some background because I'm not sure you've heard the gruesome details. The Assistant Prime Minister of Canada, her name is Chrystia Freeland. She's a huge devotee of and very chummy with the Davos crowd, you know, the globalists. And by the way, so is Trudy up there, Justin Trudeau. He's a good buddy of Soros, which, by the way, if memory serves me correct, so was Barry Obama, and so is Barry Obama. In fact, Soros was the most frequent visitor to Obama's White House in his 8 years as President of the United States. 88 times is how many times George Soros came to the White House. He hasn't gone to Canada, to Ottawa, quite so much, but he's gone often. And he and Chrystia just love one another. You know, it's a love fest. It's like the summer of love in Seattle. Well, Christia's dad was a Nazi, a real Nazi, in Germany. And he was a journalist. And his job was to, make sure that all the papers in all the occupied countries of the Third Reich towed the line and spewed out Hitler's propaganda. I wonder if that training as a youth is coming in handy now for Christia. And I wonder whether she's imparted some of it to Trudy. One of the things that's going on up there, and you've probably heard about this Emergency Powers Act that Trudy declared, illegally declared. If you read how that act is put together, and you compare it to the Charter of Rights and the statute under which emergency powers, such as the ones that he has evoked, which have only been done twice before in Canadian history, three times before, World War I, World War II, and in the 1980s, there was a kind of massive violent thing going on in one of the provinces. Nothing at all like today's situation, with people dancing in the streets and other folks, you know, bouncing around on their toys because their kids and their families are with them, and everybody's singing Oh Canada and holding hands and smiling. But this Emergency Powers Act, in addition to giving the Canadian government the right, the excuse is the right word, to use force that otherwise you could not use in Canada. This act does something else, which is, I don't know whether it's more insidious but it's certainly more devious. And it points us to the fact that Trudy and his henchmen, Christia, with the Nazi dad, are tyrants. And what is being imposed and what has been imposed over the last 2 years in Canada is tyranny. Let me tell you that as part of what Trudeau simply proclaimed, you know, this is no hack to Parliament, invoking these emergency power acts up there, all the people who are involved in the convoy, all the people who have contributed to the convoy, even $10 Canadian, that's about $8, give or take, U.S., $8, or all the people who have driven to Ottawa and brought fuel to the truckers, they are getting cut off financially. Their bank accounts, I am not making this up now. I have some audio for you underneath. I actually have some audio for you in this show, but particularly I have some audio for you to listen to and a video for you to watch underneath the podcast audio. And let me tell you that when I say cut off financially, number one, if you fall into any of these groups, including, by the way, the group that the J6 committee says are stochastic terrorists, in other words, if you have voiced disapproval of the COVID jab mandate and the mandate against interprovincial travel if you're not vaccinated or travel to another country, or, you know, it doesn't matter. If you have spoken up or you have paid up or you have participated, even, and the words are in this order, even indirectly, your bank accounts are being frozen and seized. Banks are being told to not do business with you, to not advance loans, to not allow you to withdraw money. They've tried to extend the edict to the fundraising sites. Some of the funds have been raised through some of the crypto exchanges. These ghouls in Ottawa have tried to get crypto exchanges, and they're working on it, to freeze 34 crypto wallets where money, or in the form of cryptocurrency, has been raised for the convoy. In concert with a dark hacking group that it seems, based on internet evidence, is tied directly to the Canadian government, they hacked GiveSendGo, the replacement for GoFundMe. And if you remember a few weeks ago, it is the Canadian government that induced GoFundMe to literally try and steal the $10 million that had been raised on that site and to give it to GoFundMe's choice of charities, you know, like Black Lives Matter, whom, by the way, Trudy doesn't have a problem with. In fact, he praises them. You know, black-faced Trudy, of course. By the way, his father, Pierre Trudeau, was a well-known communist. And Trudy was elected with 31% of the vote of Canada. He became prime minister with 31% of the vote. That's less than a third of the Canadian population. And of course, once these guys are in power, and we've seen it right here in the United States via Obama, they institute like-thinking leftists, uncaring about their people, or their laws, or their constitutions, or in the case of Canada, their Charter of Rights. They install them, and of course, those people install people below them. You know, kind of like Comey at the FBI, installed by Obama, and then he put in McCabe, and then McCabe put in Strzok, and, you know, the cancer spreads down until the unsuspecting public is confronted with a government that has control, a government that is amok, a government that doesn't care, a government that holds the strings of power, or thinks it does, which is just as dangerous. This financial portion of this emergency Powers Act is unbelievable. Even down to, believe it or not, if you come to Ottawa and the police get your license plate, the Emergency Powers Act enables the government to track your license plate, find out who your insurance company is, and command the insurance company to cease your coverage. No, I'm not making this up. And for all of you who are sitting there right now, kind of wide-eyed, going, no, can't be. It's Canada. And then thinking to yourself with some measure of relief, well, God, I'm glad I live in the United States. Well, folks, how many times do I have to tell you? You better get out of your box. You better drop your normalcy bias. This is not normal. These are not normal times. These are not normal people. They are tyrants. This is tyranny, and it is intentional, and it is uncaring, and it is vicious. And if you don't think it's coming our way, unless you decide to stand and you decide to muster and you get involved, you're wrong. It's coming our way like a freight train. The battleground for freedom right now is north of us, but soon it will spread south. There's other battlegrounds going on across the globe, but the eyes of the world are fixed on Canada. And shortly, as the American convoy gears up, it will be fixed on America. And I surely hope the American convoy is twice the size of the Canadian convoy. I mean, who would have thought? The Canadians, right? Good for them. Go Canada. Go truckers. I praise your courage. I admire your conviction. And I agree with your principles, because they are ours. This is no longer, folks, a Canadian thing. It's no longer really even an American thing, although we're the number one target of the globalists. It's not an Italian thing, or a Norwegian thing, or an Israeli thing, or an Australian thing. This is a world thing. This is really humanity against tyranny and tyrants that unfortunately humanity allowed naively, with a fair amount of ignorance, with an overwhelming dose of it can't happen here, to get into power. And now we're going to have to contend with it. We're going to have to pay for the years of sleepwalking. And right now, the focus is on Canada. Do you think for one moment the globalists can allow the Canadian deal to succeed? Look at how much hope they've given the rest of the world. Look at the truckers in, you know, all the European countries, and Israel, which is the Mideast, and over in the South Pacific, Australia and New Zealand. The last thing the globalists, the democratic Marxists, and the cabal can have happen is for the Canadian thing to be successful. To some extent, it already has been. It has given hope to the world. It has prompted similar events in many countries, and hopefully soon here in the United States. Supposedly that convoy is beginning February 25th. It has shown the world how despotic, how cruel, and how tyrannical Trudeau and his Canadian cabal are. And you know, for every action, there is always a reaction. The more, and this has been true throughout history, as you'll learn next week, the more tyrants clamp down, the more resistance and the more widespread resistance there is. So I'm going to keep you posted on Give, Send, Go. Right now, it's fighting a legal battle to try and get the monies to Canada. And by the way, I think the world of this fund. When the Canadians, there was an Ottawa judge who said, oh, well, you have to freeze the funds and you can't give them. Give, Send, Go said, you know, we're Americans, man. We're not Canadians. You can't tell us what to do. And every dime of this is going to go to the convoy. Good for Give, Send, Go. Unlike GoFundMe, leftist pricks that they are, you know, part of the big tech cabal. But you need to stand with the people in Canada, folks. You need to stand with those truckers, because you're standing for America, and you're standing for you, and you're standing for humanity. This is not Canada that's going on up there. It is us that's going on up there. Give that some thought, particularly since it is clear now that this is all about tyranny, all about tyranny. And if you don't think that all these leftists will lie to you, will look at you in the eye without blinking, and lie through their teeth to get into power, and then take whatever steps that they told you they weren't going to take, that they promised you, oh, I promise, that they weren't going to take, but they will, to cement their power, then you have another thing coming. Let me play you just a little clip of our friend Barry. This is a little-known clip. They've tried to hide it. We have a copy of it. It's only about 15 seconds. This was before he was elected president of the United States. This will tell you a whole lot. And you can compare it to the rhetoric he told you to get your vote, or get the vote of those Americans who, unfortunately, did pull the lever for him.
And for the international order that we have worked for generations to build. Ordinary men and women are too small-minded to govern their own affairs. That order and progress can only come when individuals surrender their rights to an all-powerful sovereign.
Haven't heard that clip before, have you? Gee, Where was the mainstream media when you needed them? Well, I think we know the answer to that. They sure as hell weren't on the right side to kind of rub it in. So you have this diabolical financial stranglehold descending on Canadians. And now, if you were in Canada, folks, what do you think you'd be thinking? Whether or not, by the way, you gave $8 Canadian to the convoy, or whether or not you carried a 5-gallon fuel can down there, or whether or not you drove in Ottawa, you'd be thinking, wait a minute, all this money or property or assets that I thought were mine, the government can just seize and take overnight for no reason, without due cause, no trial, no nothing. Wow, I better get my money out of the banks. And you know what? That's exactly what Canadians are doing. Trudy and Chrystia have managed to create literally a bank panic in Canada. And you haven't heard that anywhere. You probably will maybe by the time this show airs, because it began on Thursday the 17th. Did you know that there's so many people trying to get money out of the banks up there that at least five, and it may be more by now, of Canada's largest banks have gone offline? You can't even access your account online. You can't get money out of an ATM. And the banks, of course, are playing along with the government. Oh, you know, if you go to the ATM, you can get money. What they don't tell you is once the dough in that ATM is gone, they're not putting any more back in. And, you know, that's kind of a natural reaction. You know, when you work hard for your money and you have your savings, I mean, think, each of you think about your own personal situation. What would you do if you suddenly realized that the money you had in a bank was going to be taken? Well, you're going to run down there and get the money. And that's what's going on in Canada. And the repercussions of that could be global. And for all I know, maybe that was the intent. But it's going to affect America. It's going to affect American banks. I have told you, my great listeners, for years, get your money out of the SIFI banks, the too big to fail bunch, the Chase Manhattans and the JP Morgans and the Bank of Americas and the Wells Fargos. I mean, I have jumped up and down about it. And what's going on in Canada right now brings that point home solidly. Your money needs to go to a community bank, that would be the best, or a credit union, or at the very least, a regional, small regional bank, where it's local, where people know you, where it's not in some distant, far-off, blue-bellied city, its president having coffee with Obama, or Cadaver, or who knows who, every morning at 9 o'clock. This is a really big thing in Canada, and that means it's a really big thing for us. Understand the interrelated, the intricate, the inextricably combined and interdependent nature of the financial systems of the world, and particularly of Canada and the United States. This is a really big deal. Hopefully you listeners of many years have kind of heeded the storm warnings. And for those of you who have not, may I suggest you get ahead of the rush and get her done. Get her done. Far better to get her done and waste an hour because you never needed to get her done than to not get it done and face a disaster. And along those lines, I have exhorted you for years. I went back and looked. My interview with Ronald Reagan's Director of Safety and Preparedness was like 7 years ago. I told you then, start preparing. It's not too late, folks. Don't panic, but get her done. A lot of this stuff is going to rapidly come to a head. Whether or not that's intended, I can't tell you. One part of me thinks it is. One part of me thinks it's a little too fast than they, the cabal that we face, anticipated, and they're not really ready. I'm not sure they really anticipated what's going on in Canada. What's about to go on, I hope, in the United States, what's happening in Israel and Italy and Australia, or maybe they did. But in any event, situation is rapidly evolving. And the extent to which democratic Marxists, the left tyrants of today, will go, just as the left tyrants of yesterday, our historical story, have gone, is absolutely in your face. It is undeniable. Govern yourself accordingly. Let's get to our next segment, which is, of course, the the COVID-related segment. I think we know by now. I mean, if you don't know by now, then you've been drinking Kool-Aid, and you've been jabbed with more than the jab, and you've been living in the darkness of your cellar with your mask on for the last 2 years, and you didn't have a functioning brain cell to begin with. We have been blatantly lied to about everything for the last 2 years, and that was intentional to create fear, to create the psychosis of COVID. I had a segment. I went over that with you. This is 3-4 weeks ago. You can go back to that show. Listen to the interviews with Dr. Robert Malone and McCullough and Zelenko and, you know, all these outstanding immunologists, virologists, Nobel Prize winners, Nobel Prize designees. Everything has been a mirage. That doesn't mean there's not COVID, and that doesn't mean that there aren't people who died of COVID. Guess what? There's also flu, and there's people who die of flu. There's also heart attacks, and there's people who die of that. Death is part of the human condition, and the actual survival rate of COVID at 99.84, unless you're over, and various scientists disagree on the age, but around 75, and have one or two serious comorbidities, is 99.84%. And we have been pushed into a psychosis. That is, it's an understatement. How's that? I mean, this is the greatest fraud ever perpetrated on humanity, never mind here in the United States. Although the United States has certain particularly egregious characteristics of this fraud that other countries don't have. And that includes the CDC, the FDA, the NIH, Fauci and his cabal, and of course the Democratic Marxists in the administration and to whatever extent they've been appointed in the Justice Department and the courts. I'm not going to go over this in detail with you this week, but do you remember how I was showing you in the historical story that these dictators, these tyrants, seize power in any way they can, including lying about whether or not the sun has risen? You know, in Texas, Beto O'Rourke, in 2018, he said he was a supporter of the Second Amendment. In 2019, he said, hell yeah, I'm going to take your AR-15. And now, after a new poll came out, of course, because the left is driven by polls, because polls mean votes, and votes means power. Truth means nothing. The Constitution means zero. And you and I mean less than zero. But Beto O'Rourke's current flip-flop is that, oh, you know, I support the Second Amendment. I mean, people can buy guns, etc. But then he went on to say, I'll give you the exact quote later in the show. However, you know, some of these guns are weapons of war, and we have to protect the children. In other words, he doesn't want to lose his Democratic base, so he leaves the wedge in there where you can take your guns. But he wants to get whatever votes he can because he's getting his butt kicked by Abbott in the polls. So suddenly he once again supports the Second Amendment. This is what the left does. There's going to be a clip of Trudy as he was trying to become prime minister 6 years ago. I mean, this has happened in 6 years to poor Canada. And that'll be right under the audio bar. May I suggest you listen to it? It's very short. And you can hear him very solemnly and very earnestly, his big eyes looking into the camera, tell you how important Canadians are and how important each individual Canadian is and how sacrosanct and sacred are the rights of every Canadian citizen under the Charter of Rights, which is kind of like their constitution. And then you see them today. You know, it goes back to that story I've told several times and probably will tell again. It's the frog and the scorpion, you know? It is the nature of the beast. The only thing they can do is mask it. And it's our job to rip off that mask and see what's really going on. To engage our brains, to step out of our box, to disregard our normalcy bias and go, what's really going on here? And what really is going to be the end result? And where is this guy really going to take us or do to us? So right now, you know, it's very popular in the United States for all the Democrats, all of a sudden, just in the last week or two, I talked about it last week, all of a sudden, you know, now we have new science and, you know, the press is in there saying 3/4 of the American population are now, you know, immune to the Omicron variant. They have immunity. Remember, this is the same outfits that 3 months ago were saying there was no natural immunity and the vaccine was way better than natural immunity, and I can go on and on. You know all the crap you've been fed. Day in, day out, hour in, hour out. Repetition of the big lie, the Goebbels theory back from Nazi Germany. If you tell a lie, tell it big and tell it often. And here we are. Now, the question is, what are we going to do about it? But to give you an idea of how dark and insidious and evil these people are, Project Veritas, man, those guys rock. I just love Project Veritas. They have the new FDA director, who's been on the FDA and the Vaccine Approval Board for a very long time, 22 years. They have him on camera just in the last week. And I'm going to go over it in detail with you next week, because it's part of that next segment on tyranny. Okay, the guy's name is Christopher Cole, and he played a major role in determining the safety and the effectiveness of the COVID-19 vaccines. Oh, gee, must be a coincidence. And it was his job to assess them for emergency use authorization. Let me give you one quote out of this video. Quote, Biden wants to inoculate as many people as possible. You'll have to get an annual shot. I mean, it hasn't been formally announced yet because they don't want to, like, rile everyone up. It's going to be a gradual thing. Schools are going to mandate it. That's a quote, folks. At the same time that an administration who looked you in the eye prior to you voting for it, saying national mandates are not something we would ever even contemplate and that we don't have the right to do. And then they did it. And now they're saying, well, there's new science, so now we're going to relax it all. And here's the guy who's going to take over from the FDA in literally days ago telling you what the real skinny is, which is what we know. They're lying to you to stay in power. Everything the left is going to tell you between now and Election Day on November 22 is what they think you want to hear based on their polls. It has not one stitch or semblance or even reasonable approximation of what they are really going to do and what they are really planning to do. This Project Veritas tape is a gem, and we're going to try and have it up for you under the audio bar on the website on therightsideradio.com this week, and we're going to talk about it next week. Then we have, on the COVID front, a little goodie. Do you remember when, over a year ago, I told you that the PCR tests were intentionally designed, because of the number of times they were running the transects, or whatever the medical term is, to determine if you had, quote-unquote, COVID? Do you remember me telling you that those tests were outrageous, that the Nobel Prize laureate-winning gentleman who designed the PCR said you can't use this test for this? And I also told you that your DNA was being collected through these swabs, and that likely it would eventually wind up with the Red Chinese Army. And I got a bunch of letters. Oh, you're just crazy, man. You're nuts. You're loco. Where's your tin foil? I mean, you should see some of the emails. And of course, the mainstream media, whoever was talking about that at the time, this was a conspiracy theory. You know, it's amazing how all these conspiracy theories have become truth. You know, like Durham's court pleadings saying that Hillary hacked, literally hacked, the servers not only in Trump Tower but in the White House. But that was all a conspiracy theory, you know. And these PCR up-your-nose tests, that was just a conspiracy theory too. It just so happens that very quietly on the sly over the last week, the CDC has admitted, by the way, you know those PCR tests, you know those cotton swabs that we stuck up your nose and wiggled around? They all went to a laboratory. Yep. And, you know, they're doing genetic sequencing on all the tests. Mm-hmm. And, oh, by the way, the laboratory is owned by the Chinese, even though it's located in the United States. Imagine that. And then, of course, you ask, well, why would the Chinese want, like, all our genetic sequencing? Well, why don't we go back to what I also told you, by the way, a year or two ahead of the rest of the press, two, I think. The Chinese have launched an attack on America. And they have told us three times, in unequivocal terms, through speeches by their defense ministers to the high mucky mucks in the CCP and the top red Chinese military brass, that they were going to start it with a biological attack. So if you didn't believe them, maybe you ought to rethink that doubt. And the reason that they want our genetic sequencing, by the way, or the genetic sequencing of lots of us, is to perfect whatever's coming next. And if you don't think I'm, if you think I'm back in tinfoil hat territory, or you think I'm off on another conspiracy theory, you know, Alice in Wonderland trail, or I've been gobbled up by that tornado and Dorothy and, you know, me and Toto and Dorothy are whisking off to the land of Oz, well, think again. So let's categorize the big lies around COVID. In the first phase, we had the lie that, oh, don't worry, not a problem. That's Fauci himself at the end of February 2020. Then we had the, oh, this is a horrible disease. It's going to be, there's going to be millions of people killed. Remember the UK study that the CDC ran around with and NIH, 2.2 million people? And this was used not only to hoodwink us, the people, but to hoodwink those who had to make decisions, like Trump and his cabinet. Do you remember the, oh, it's just 2 weeks to slow the spread? Do you remember that back in March of 2020? Do you remember the, the masks. The masks are going to save your life. Do you remember the ivermectin doesn't work? You know, it's horse paste. How about the hydroxychloroquine and Z-Pak, the erythromycin combination? That doesn't work either, you know. How about the only thing that works is remdesivir? Oh, we forgot to tell you about those studies in 2018 where 50% of the people kind of died from the drug when it was brought out for Ebola. And now it's the only prescribed, it's the only CDC-blessed, kissed drug that can be administered in a hospital. In fact, if you don't use remdesivir, you don't get all your bounty payments, which we're about to talk about, if you're a hospital, which range somewhere between $100,000 per COVID patient to $379,000 per COVID patient, depending upon what hospital, where it's located. Nobody told you about that was in the American Care Act, you know, that $2.1 trillion boondoggle that was passed. And they forgot to tell you about those extra payments that went to people who weren't working. So now we have a labor shortage. Even as the same government who told us all these goodies tells us that unemployment is 4.1%. Well, yeah, if you don't count the 65 million people who aren't going to work. And then we had the phase of the lie that was, oh, the variants are coming. The variants are coming. I mean, just, you know, this, the Russians are coming, or the variants are coming. Something's always coming. As you'll see in the rat-a-tat-tat, the other thing that's coming, and I've been warning you about this, is the climate change. Oh, yeah, the new climate change report from NOAA. Wow. If you don't die from COVID, then you're going to die as the seas rise. You better get your water wings. You better draw the money out of your account before we seize it so you can buy your water wings and float around in these rising seas. Assuming, of course, you make it through this horrible COVID pandemic. And by the way, I'm not making light of COVID. There are many people who have really died of COVID. Not near as many as they say, but many. And if it was a loved one of yours, it hurts no matter what the cause of death is. So I'm not minimizing it. But I'm here to tell you that somewhere between 80 and 90% of those deaths were preventable, except for all these lies, particularly about early treatment and therapeutic drugs, particularly ivermectin, and secondarily, HCQ. Do you think there's a reason? Remember, lies are two ways, right? By a representation, something somebody tells you, or by some material fact they don't tell you. That's as big a lie as them telling you something. You might ask yourself, how come the CDC, who has our health, our interests, you know, the interests of the American people, close to their heart, and the Biden administration too, you know, President Cadaver and his cabal, how come they haven't mentioned vitamin D3? I mean, that's been a scientifically proven fact relative to immune system strengthening since quite a while. How come they didn't tell you about zinc? You know, if you get one of those little cold deals, you're getting a cold and you go out and you get your lozenges, what do you think's in them, folks? It's zinc. You think they knew that zinc was an effective tool against binding and replication of coronaviruses like the common cold some time ago? Maybe they forgot about that. And now we're in the phase of lying about the jabs. And it's not just the general public. It's the military. I brought you over the last 2 weeks the stories about this attorney by the name of Renz, and God bless him. In fact, I believe there's a link on the website where you can donate to him. He's on a crusade, and it's a worthy crusade, and it's a just crusade. And the crusade is for everybody, but particularly for the military. And what the government is doing, they are downplaying. Over the last 2 weeks, I was going to bring you VAERS updates. I think I brought you last VAERS update, which is well over a million, 2 weeks ago. I've been meaning to do it the last 2 weeks, but you know what? God, there's something wrong with the VAERS site. You know, somehow things aren't getting recorded, or who knows what's going on. You know, those technical gremlins are at work again. Yeah, we just can't help it. And the same thing's been going on with the Department of Defense. You know, Secretary Austin. Oh, that formidable hulk of a man that Putin cowers before. And Chairman Xi holds in high respect, reverence, and fear. Yeah, right. You bet. You know, these are not imposing figures. Blinken and Austin and Cadaver and Susan Rice. And our enemies full well know where their hearts lay, what strings our enemies hold that they can pull, and how feckless and anti-American they are at heart. They know that ideology of these people at the FDA, the CDC, the NIH, and their greed, their personal greed, in the Cadaver administration and on ad infinitum throughout the agencies. Our enemies know. In fact, our enemies know a lot more than those of us, and I don't think I'm including my audience in this, but those Americans who still rely on mainstream media for their quote-unquote news. Wow. I mean, lie to me once, shame on me. Lie to me twice, double shame on me. Lie to me three times, and I'm still listening to you? Wow. A pox on my house. And it's the same with the government. They're now trying to tell us that the jabs are safe and effective. They've been telling us that for a year. Never mind the fact, as I'm going to go over here in the in the rat-a-tat-tat, never mind the fact that all-cause mortalities spiked in 2021 and are continuing to spike, in fact, an increasing spike, in 2022. This is not COVID deaths, folks. This is all-cause mortalities, concentrated, I might add, in certain specific areas. The same areas that scientists the world over have been warning you about relative to the effects of the jab. Wait till I get into some of the rat-a-tat-tat on this. And if you really bore down, if you take, let's say, as a subset of the American public, the Department of Defense, okay, let's look at what Renz has to say again, because there's more interviews that he's done, there's more information out there, and this is something we're going to continue to cover because it's critical. It's critical because the DOD record-keeping was, up to this time, the best in the world on its military members, but no more. You know, the FBI used to be the premier law enforcement agency in the world, but no more. The CDC thumped its chest as the preeminent health agency in the world, but no more. So Renz is a Midwestern attorney. He's from Ohio. He's testified before the U.S. Senate. He testified in front of Ron Johnson's panel. By the way, Senator Johnson needs your support. Send him some money. He is like one of the few senators standing up for you and your health and your autonomy, your health autonomy. And he's one of the few senators beating the drums on the jabs and on COVID and on the immense and intentional frauds that have been perpetrated on the American people. As a quick refresher, Renz gathered information which was originally brought to him by these highly credentialed physicians and public health officials, high-ranking military, now whistleblowers, and from the DOD. What they saw was a huge spike in illnesses in the military in 2021, and they tried to figure out why. And they use as their basis what's called the Defense Medical Epidemiology Database, or DMED, to put together their statistics. And DMED is what's considered really to be about the best, one of the best databases for medical data. And it is frequently used, and it has been used over the last 5 years to support hundreds of peer-reviewed scientific studies, literature, papers, you name it. And what they found was Basically, a 983.3% increase in diseases and injuries reported in the military in 2021, the year that the military was getting the jabs, compared to 2020 and the previous years. Now, you would think that people who were concerned about your health, concerned about the country's security, would be pretty upset over this and would be trying to get to the bottom of it. But no, no. The DOD instead went to PolitiFact, which is basically a left-leaning, you know, so-called fact-checker. And the DOD told them that all this was false because the data in DMED, the military just found out, by the way, after all this information came out, was incorrect for the years 2016 through 2020. You know, they forgot to add some events that occurred in those years. The best medical database in the world, whose numbers have been the basis of peer-reviewed papers and you name it. They forgot to, you know, something happened, you know, the doctor ran out of ink, you know, so he forgot to fill out the report or, you know, the cat ate my homework, whatever. And they're now adjusting the numbers for 2016 through 2020. Guess how much they're adjusting them by? 20 million medical incidents per year. I wish I was making this up. I'm not. Remember, there's 1.2 million, give or take, people in our active military. Do you smell something here, maybe? And they took the website down. Fortunately, Wrens had done screenshots of everything, and the whistleblowers had. So they have the evidence, which they've disseminated far and wide. But they took the website down, and all of a sudden, here it comes again. You know, it's kind of like election night in 2020. And all those numbers are just going up and going up. 20 million incidents a year in just those 4 years. Now, they haven't been able to explain why 2021 was accurate and the 4 years previous to it were inaccurate. And they haven't been able to explain why they just seem to catch it now. And they can't seem to back up with any kind of paperwork or records this magical increase of 20 million medical incidents in the military in 2016, 17, 18, 19, and 20. But, you know, we're the government. We're here to help you. You got to trust us. Trust us, folks. Trust us. Let's talk about this hospital payment deal, this scam, this bounty on COVID patients. Tennessee, 166,000. West Virginia, 471,000. I guess I was off on the high one. Nebraska, 379,000. North Dakota, 339,000. I did a lot of research on this. The numbers are really well hidden. It varies from location to location, hospital to hospital, hospital group to hospital group, state to state. But roughly, maybe a little bit off, but you'll get the idea. For a test, $650 and up. If it's a positive test, then you're in the thousands to the hospital. If you admit the patient, it seems to be $6,000 to $13,000 per patient. If you put them in ICU, $5,000 to $15,000. If you put them on a ventilator, $39,000 to $42,000. And if they die, somewhere between $8,000 and $15,000. Oh, and by the way, if you use remdesivir, then you get a 20% bonus on everything, plus a payment for using remdesivir. Now here's the clincher. If you don't follow the NIH protocols, you know, guess what? You don't get a dime. If you give somebody ivermectin, HCQ, give them early treatment, don't put them on a ventilator, you know, when supposedly the guidelines tell you you got to stick the tube down their throat. If you don't use remdesivir, if you use any other drugs, you don't get a dime. You think they want you to live, folks? I'll tell you what, we're running out of time, as always, and everybody, I'm sure, is shaking their heads and going, how is he going to do a smaller show? Let's get into rat-a-tat-tat. Let's cover as much as we can. We're going to go really fast. The state of Texas, Go Texas, has filed a lawsuit against the United States government to block the federal mask mandate. If you remember, Biden signed an executive order mandating that masks be worn on planes, trains, airports, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton, Texas Public Policy Foundation, filed the lawsuit. And you know what? Go Texas. Go Texas. Okay, border security. I mean, wow. I brought you last week, you know, where TSA will, they'll let you, if you're a legal immigrant, if you have an arrest warrant, deportation hearing papers, they're all considered official papers for boarding a plane and you're waved through TSA. No proof of ID, no nothing, just your arrest warrant. It's okay for you to fly. It gets even better. The U.S. Citizens and Immigration Services, USCIS, just released its new mission statement. Now, under Trump, folks, the statement was, you know, clear. It was unambiguous. It promised that USCIS, or should we say useless, would run our immigration system, safeguarding its integrity and protecting Americans, securing the homeland, and honoring our values. Guess what? The new one, you know, our friend Mayorkas up there, I warned you about him long before he was in this position. Okay, quote, at its core, USCIS is about delivering decisions to families, businesses, workers, and those seeking refuge in our country. America's promise as a nation of welcome. Just so you really get this, the words upholding the law and the words protecting Americans are no longer in the mission statement. Once again, they have your interest foremost in their minds, folks. Seattle's transit system, oh, it's basically unusable. It was the fastest growing transit system in the United States, up to 750,000 users per day. It's now dropped off precipitously because, guess what? Under the woke policies of Seattle, you get homeless drug addicts living down in the transit system, and who wants to go there anymore? So, Seattle has come up with a plan. Oh, you got a King County website. You can go right there and read it. The plan is called the Safety, Security, and Fair Enforcement Initiative. Oh, gee, that sounds great. And it aims to, quote, improve the dangerous environment on transit while showing compassion, especially to homeless people, unquote. And it's a, quote, necessary step on its journey to becoming an anti-racist mobility agency, unquote. Okay, remind me not to run on, to not use that transit system, would you, please? Okay, then there's this guy, he's this big Democratic activist, and Joy Reid has had him on TV, and he's been in all the, like, left-wing talk shows, and he tried to kill somebody, and actually, he did kill somebody, and now, suddenly, the media doesn't know anything about him. This is with videos of him on TV and everybody whooping it up, and he's like the main guest. That'll give you an idea of just how upside down all this stuff is. Then there's this Antifa kind of army soldier. Not a real army soldier. I mean Antifa army. So he, there's a film of him breaking into the United States Senator's office in North Dakota with an axe. He gets off with probation when he should get 16 months mandatory. And not only that, the FBI gives him his axe back. I'm not making this up. I'm really not making this up. And there, his social media post, his name is Starks, he bragged, I'll give you a quote, about using a rifle to hunt fascists and also using soup cans as projectiles to assault police. Okay. You know, it's the no bail deal, right? It's whatever. Okay. Oh, and then Noah. And remember, now, if you don't die from COVID, you're going to drown because all the seas are rising. So Noah just came up with this report. Gee, how opportune is this, right? Distract. The expected sea level rise that they're now projecting is going to mean a, quote, profound increase, unquote, in coastal flooding. Huh. Even if it's no heavy rains. Yes, you bet. And the NOAA administrator, oh yes, you know, a Biden appointee, quote, this report is a wake-up call for the United States. Ooh, yes, okay, you bet. I'm going to go out and buy my rubber ducky and float on him right now. Here's another quote. Science is indisputable. Listen, anytime the left has science, it's indisputable. Just ask Fauci. He is science. And urgent action is required to mitigate a climate crisis that is well underway. This is NASA Administrator Bill Nelson, by the way. And then Secretary of Commerce Gina Raimondo, she gets into the act. Quote, for businesses along the coast, knowing what to expect and how to plan for the future is critical. They need to understand risks and make smart investments in the years ahead. You know what she means by investments? You know, the Build Back Better thing? You know, folks, it's all tie it in. And then White House climate advisor, she jumps on board, Gina McCarthy, and she says that this report represents, quote, a blinking code red. Ooh, yes. Get your rubber ducky right now. Don't delay. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Okay, whatever. All right. We're not going to talk about Biden and the oil thing. We all know what's going on there. How about Biden's UN ambassador? This will give you an idea of just how great this administration is, how woke they are. Her name is Linda Thomas Greenfield, and she's like a Obama disciple, which is 90% of Kadaver's administration, and she loves to trash America every time she opens her mouth, actually. She told the National Action Network, NAN, which is Sharpton's kind of deal, that if America is going to join the UN's Human Rights Council, we need to acknowledge our own failures. Yeah, but China's on the Human Rights Council, and that's cool, man. That's cool. That's cool. Just send me another 31 million, says Kadaver. I'll be happy. You can be on the Human Rights Council. Here's a quote from our United States UN ambassador. Quote, white supremacy is weaved into our founding documents and principles, unquote. Hey, she's a big proponent, by the way, of critical race theory, of course. And let me give you another quote. This is in front of the UN representing the United States of America. Quote, because Black Lives Matter, we need to dismantle white supremacy at every turn. Racism is endemic. It's built in like rot in a frame. And it remains and it festers. And it spreads because many of those in charge allow it to. Gee, I thought you were in charge, babe. Others look away and pretend it's not there, but like a cancer, if ignored, it grows. This woman is representing us at the United Nations, folks. Listen, it gets worse from there. It gets worse from there. But one of the real key quotes in here, quote, I have seen for myself how the original sin of slavery weaved white supremacy into our founding documents and principles. Do you see that attack on the Constitution again? Remember Biden last week, I brought it up to you in the show? The Constitution is a living, you know, it's an adoptable document. This is all the same attack. This is all the left. These people move in ideological, anti-American, anti-UNI lockstep. It's amazing. In a really troubling story, Remington Arms, this was just last Tuesday, they settled liability claims with the families of the 5 adults and the 4 kids that were killed at the Sandy Hook Elementary school massacre in Connecticut. You know, this is like 8 years ago now. This is the first time that a gun maker, they weren't held liable, but they admitted tacitly liability for a mass shooting. This is really a bad precedent. I mean, this is a big red flag on gun control, folks. There was a total of 20 students and 6 adults killed. This is December 14th, 2012. I guess it was 10 years ago. And the guy who did it, his name was Adam Lanza. This was a legally owned Remington Bushmaster AR-15 that he stole from his mother and then killed her with it before going to the school. In any event, that's worrisome. That's a worrisome deal. And Remington Arms is paying $33 million to those 9 families. That's about $3.66 million, by my math, to each relative. We got to keep an eye on this. This is one of the left's wish list to get gun manufacturers liable for the use of their guns. You know, this is, never mind that you're not trying to hold car manufacturers liable for accidents or Facebook liable for interfering in elections and censorship, but, you know, the gun manufacturers, that's a different deal. In really good news, a Pennsylvania court struck down a law that requires Philadelphia residents to report when firearms are lost or stolen. So that's a good one for the 2A. You may agree with it common sense-wise or you may not. But right now, you let the camel's nose under the tent, you're going to have a problem with guns because, boy, do they want to get rid of the guns. Just think about if Canadians had not been disarmed or Australians had not been disarmed. You're watching it play out, folks. It's why that protection is in the Second Amendment. It's the one that protects all the others. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. Have a great week.
Please remember, if you've missed any shows, just click on Show Archive and you'll find all of his shows. We look forward to seeing you here again next week for another episode of Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side.